Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hey.
Hey. And, yeah, he's back. Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Woo!
Hello.
You made it.
Hello. I almost saw World War Z yesterday, actually. Yeah. Funny enough. It would
have been interesting to have gotten your opinion on that.
Yeah, you know, White House Down ended, and there was something only about a 13-minute gap between me walking out of the theater and World War Z starting, and I thought, I have other things to do.
Well, I saw this movie last night at 10 o'clock, so I didn't have time for anything else after that.
Okay. See, last week I was actually busy, but this week I wasn't. I just sort of went, I'll see it some other time.
Well, it's good to have you back. Today we will be talking about the second White House in Distress film, White House Down, which follows a couple months after Olympus Has Fallen. This one is directed by Roland Emmerich and stars Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx, and Maggie Gyllenhaal, along with Richard Jenkins and a couple of other stellar character actors. But first, let's talk about some stuff. Go to iTunes. Why don't you do that? Subscribe to us. Give us a rating, give us a comment, because we love to hear from you. Speaking of loving to hear from you, if you'd like, you can also email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com with any of your questions, comments, concerns, complaints, caterwauling. Okay, that's it. So today our discussion topic is going to be Channing Tatum inspired. We're going to talk about actors who, for one reason or another, we got off on the bad foot with, but who, through sheer will, were able to win us back. So, obviously, I guess we should just start with Channing Tatum. Was anyone a fan of Channing Tatum from the beginning?
I sort of was.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't... I definitely like him more now after sort of this little run he's had, but I always kind of liked his... There's something about his presence which I've always appreciated. Kind of this... how would you put it? Because he's not... He's a very limited actor, but I think that... there are a few roles where I think he was kind of put in the right position where he could kind of play in that key. And when he can play in that key, he actually works well. I think he has more charisma than most leading men of his age. I think that he kind of has an affability to him, which directors lately have caught on to and are using to much greater effect. You know, I guess I think there was some people saying last year, 2012 was the year of Channing Tatum, which I could sort of see, but it felt kind of funny to me because I've always liked the guy, and I guess I always saw something there, which maybe it just took a while to catch on to for other people.
Yeah, I knew him primarily from his dance movies, and was not a fan. Fighting, same thing. Then I saw him get shot to death at the beginning of Public Enemies.
Great performance. Perfect. Really leaves an impression.
That's actually still far and away not his best movie, but the best movie he's been in.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
I mean, it's getting a little bit of a challenge because, well, not, I was going to say something, but I mean, he was in G.I. Joe Rise of the Cobra, and I think that's where I realized that, like, as far as action stars go, he is, like, the most charismatic one that we have right now in his age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Because Taylor Kitsch obviously isn't going to step in to fill those shoes.
Yeah.
No. Poor Kitsch. He was then in Dear John, which I never saw, but I don't think I need to. But yeah, it was around the time of Haywire and, oddly enough, The Vow, which I had to see. That was my first review for the film stage. That I realized that he's actually quite a charming individual, quite a good actor. If it wasn't for him in The Vow, I probably would have hated that movie. But there's something about him and his charisma and his charm, and you just really get on his side. And then, of course, 21 Jump Street, Magic Mike, Side Effects. Like, these are all things that have kind of cemented my feelings towards the man. And now I'm actually excited to see Channing Tatum and stuff. And I've remembered that his name is Channing Tatum, not Tatum Channing. which in itself is a kind of wonderful achievement for him.
It's like a mistake my dad would make.
Yeah, for the longest time I was like, remember, alphabetical order, C before T, Channing Tatum, Channing Tatum. Danny, what about yourself?
Yeah, I can't really remember being anti-Tatum. Probably just because before he sort of had his breakout, I didn't really see many of his movies. Like, I haven't seen the Step Up films, which I guess were kind of his early calling cards. So until I started seeing him in movies that I liked, I didn't really have many encounters with him. So it was just kind of like, it was a very uneventful relationship until I started liking him. So no negativity on my part. I didn't contribute to this Tatum rebirth stuff. He was just never born for me until recently.
So he had to struggle just to get on your radar.
Yeah, that's
exactly how high up Danny King is.
Yeah.
Danny King don't front with no fools. All right, so who are some other actors that we felt this way towards? That maybe we saw them in a movie, a chick flick or something, and we're like, nah, never mind. But then, as time went on, we saw them in some other stuff. We started to fall in line with them.
You know, when I was little, I was young, I never liked Alec Baldwin.
Okay.
It was really weird. I was like eight
or
nine.
This is not something I would have predicted.
I was like eight or nine. I was like, I don't like Alec Baldwin. Which is, it's weird that someone that age would have an opinion
on
him.
Alec Baldwin at all.
And then, I don't know, I guess he sort of, I think he was on like an episode of The Simpsons or something. And after that I went, okay, maybe this guy's okay. And then years later, I eventually just, I saw the light and I realized that Baldwin was a valuable commodity. Sort of
Baldwin.
A weird experience.
That is a weird, like, why did you have an opinion on him when you were nine?
I think I saw him in like Mercury Rising with Bruce Willis. And I was like, this guy, I don't like this guy. I don't know why.
You think maybe it was probably just like your untainted 9-year-old moral core where like you kind of conflate bad guys in movies with bad guys in real life?
That could have been part of it. Yeah, could have been.
Yeah. I've had that happen to me a few times where I'm like, man, that guy's a dick. And then I remember that I just saw a movie with him as a bad guy in like the second grade or something.
Yes.
Do you know how long it took for me to really get that, like, the conflict between Jerry Seinfeld and Newman in Seinfeld was, like, joking and not real just because of Jurassic Park? It's like, man, Wayne Knight's a bitch. I hate that guy.
Yeah. I've always had a conflicted relationship because I have the same last name as that character. It's, like, not really the best character to be associated with.
Do people? I've held off from doing it, but do a lot of people do the Jerry Seinfeld Newman?
It was more popular like when. See, I had started watching Seinfeld when I went into reruns. I guess I was in like the third grade at the time, but most people I know didn't catch on until about the sixth grade. You see. So mm-hmm. for like I think I'd seen like every Seinfeld episode by that point, so. Then when it got into that, it was sort of old hat for me. I went, oh yeah, you're just catching up now. Great. So.
Oh man.
That's that.
All right, Danny, what about yourself?
Well, in terms of like one sort of like Nick's Alec Baldwin pick, like just an irrational sort of dislike when you were younger. For me, it was Helen Mirren.
What? What is wrong with you two? Like, where is this guy? I was expecting, well, I'll have mine, but I was expecting something way different than what we're getting right now.
Well, this is just kind of an off the cuff one, but the only reason is that I remember like seeing The Queen, and this was like in the early days of my like getting into movies, I guess. And I had heard like the movie was supposed to be really good. And so I rented it and I totally hated it. And I thought it was like just really boring or whatever. And so every time I would see Helen Mirren after that, I would be like, oh my God, like this is like the effing like queen from that movie. And it would just always piss me off. And Jesus so Christ. I think after what, like, 6 or 7 years, I've had enough distance to finally accept Helen Mirren as a film actress.
What?
Like I said, this was an irrational one. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no, I can see that. that is so bizarre. Oh God. All right. So I'm gonna go with one that probably could have been guessed at for the longest time. I guess because it came about at the right moment in my life. I hated Leonardo DiCaprio. Like,
no
shit.
Well, you know, it was like Romeo and Juliet and then Titanic. And then he had a couple of really shitty things like The Man in the Iron Mask and The Beach. And so at first I was just like this goddamn pretty boy and all the girls like him and I want the girls to like me. And then when I started watching some of his other stuff, I was like, man, The Beach is a terrible fucking movie. Like, so he can't even act. He can't even, like, do something interesting. And then he took a 4-year break before getting into Gangs in New York. And that just started the renaissance for me. Did I say that word acceptably this time, Nick?
Yes, you did.
So the Leonardo DiCaprio renaissance began with Gangs in New York. And I think at that point it kind of like forced me to start looking at him seriously. And then his continued work with really good directors in really challenging films. It didn't take long for me. I think it was Gangs of New York and then Catch Me If You Can. And suddenly I was like, okay, wait, no. Maybe I misjudged this man. And maybe my younger self, who is just predisposed to hate anything that women like, just let me, like, it got the better of me.
Wow, young misogynist you.
But it was because I was like, it was just on that cusp of like, girls are icky, but then all of a sudden, like, but I'd really like to hug one. And like that creates the perfect storm of, like, you know, oh, like Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Does anyone, am I the only one here old enough to remember when he was a thing?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, oh, JTT, and I was just like, what is this insanity that's engulfed this entire half of my species? Yeah. And then I started to see some of the older stuff he did before his life got train wrecked by Romeo and Juliet and Titanic. Things like The Basketball Diaries and What's Eating Gilbert Grape. And I'm like, oh, wait. No, he was always this pretty good. Of course, then I actually saw him on an episode of The Growing Pains. That was weird. But yeah, so Leonardo DiCaprio. Sorry, dude. I really dig your stuff now. Keep up the good work. I'm really looking forward to The Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street!
That trailer is a goddamn masterpiece.
Yeah.
That trailer is better than most of the movies I've seen this year.
Yes, it's true.
Indeed. Yeah, so any others that we want to throw out there? Or did you two just randomly decide to hate two very accomplished actors when you were younger and you've grown out of it?
I have another small one, which is that when I was a kid, a weird, like, recurring movie for me was this movie called Angels in the Outfield.
Okay.
And a really young Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in that movie.
Yes, he is.
And so I remember when he started acting in these, like, movies like Brick or, like, Mysterious Skin.
Yeah.
It sort of, like, confused me. And then by the time he was, like, doing these huge Hollywood movies, like Inception especially, it totally boggled my mind that this, like, weird kid from this movie I watched as a child was in these Christopher Nolan movies. Like, it just took a while for me to get that around my head. I was just like, what? Like, this kid was in Angels in the Outfield. Like, why is he in Inception? Like, go away. But I've certainly grown to like him, and no longer hold any negative feelings.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the ads for The Lookout on TV, and I was like, isn't that the kid from Third Rock from the Sun?
Yeah.
What is he doing here?
Have you seen The Lookout?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not like fine art, but it's definitely above some of the other shit that we have to watch.
Yeah.
Actually, that movie, like, there's a really sad moment in that movie that I'm still, like, kind of angry about.
Oh, do you want to work through that?
No, it's okay.
Okay, good, because neither do I.
Even though I know that you don't give a shit about spoilers, I'm gonna. In case I've encouraged three people to check out The Lookout just by talking about it.
Yeah,
it's an earned moment, but it's still one that, like, tugs at the heartstrings. Mm-hmm. I this doesn't really count, but Selena Gomez. I think I used to like make a joke that she was my favorite singer and actress, just because it was so absurd, but just because she was doing all of it anyway. And then Spring Breakers came out, and now I'm actually kind of excited to see what she does. Damn it. Self-fulfilling prophecy. But again, that doesn't really count, because I think like the one thing that I watched with her in it was like the Wizards of Waverly Place, because I was babysitting some child. And I was like, holy shit, this is the person I've been joking about?
Great film.
It's not a film, it's a TV show.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. There probably has been a film, but... Who knows? Any others before we move on to Olympus Has Fallen? No, White House Down. Oh, this is going to be a problem.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
What?
It's a joke.
Yeah, okay. No, I agree.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Really took until Lincoln for me to admit that he's a good actor.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Does anyone have anyone that they still don't like? That'd be an interesting one.
Paul Dano.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah, you can ask Jordan about that. I don't like Dano. I think he's like
personally offend you, or
I think he stinks.
What?
That's what? I think he's bad.
Have you seen that trailer for Prisoners?
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing Hugh Jackman torture him.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I once saw him at a Tribeca screening. This was in like 2011. He was outside the theater for Beyond the Black Rainbow. And I saw him and I yelled, "I've abandoned my child." And he didn't look at me. Like, he was right there. I mean, he was like, about maybe 6-7 feet away. So he definitely heard me, but he didn't look at me.
It'd be hilarious if he didn't look at you, but then a cop came over to you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what?
That's amazing.
That's not how safe haven laws work. Oh my god. Is that why you don't like him?
I suppose it adds to my personal indignation.
I've abandoned my child.
He has no sense of humor about his work. That's the conclusion we can make there.
Well, that was a very serious movie. That man had actually abandoned his child.
That's true.
Oh my god. I still don't like Meryl Streep.
Really?
Almost to the point where I like flat out to refuse to watch a movie based solely on her presence.
I might kind of be with you there, actually. Okay. I don't know if you're joking or not.
No, I really don't like Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I think she was great when she was younger, particularly like The Deer Hunter, which is probably my favorite performance of hers because it's so low key. But I've said to the scorn and boos, the actual boos of people when I've said this, that I think she's the female Al Pacino.
Oh, God, yeah. No, that's it exactly.
Which is to say...
Except she doesn't go crazy in her movies, so she's still not fun to watch.
That's true, yeah. But she puts on like an accent and she kind of flaunts around and people go, "Oh, that's so great." And then I'm just sitting there thinking, it's okay, but... people say she's the best actress in the world, and I'm just make me laugh.
No, God, no. She reminds me of like high school actors. You know, like if you're on your high school's drama club in any way.
What does Danny think of our?
I see where you're coming from because, at a certain point, like my opinion of an actor, if they're talented, it really kind of comes down to their project selection in a lot of ways, and I just like don't care about a lot of the movies she's in. I actually liked Hope Springs, so that was sort of like a good boon for her, but like Julie and Julia, stuff like that, it's just like
I think she's dreadful in that movie.
Yeah, it's just
well, I mean, like, first of all, you're starting off with Julia Childs, who never seemed like a real person to me anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're giving it to Meryl Streep. Like, that's just insanity. That's like if you got Al Pacino to play Charlie Sheen. Like,
are you kidding? Dude, I would see that.
I would see it, but I mean, like,
terrific.
I wouldn't expect like a nuanced, naturalistic performance. Wait, can we do this now? I mean, we got Michael Shannon to read that sorority girl letter, so why can't we get Al Pacino to read transcripts from Charlie Sheen's stuff?
You know, directed by Jeff Nichols.
You know what recent criminally underappreciated movie she's good in. Jonathan Demme's The Manchurian Candidate, which is a movie I really like. I know it's kind of, it has sort of the original kind of casts a shadow over it, but I really like that movie, especially as an update of that story. And Meryl Streep is good in it, where she plays Hillary Clinton, basically.
I just, like, the thing I didn't like about that film is just the fact that, like, I don't know, it's like it's corporations now, and then, like, they call it, like, Manchurian Global or whatever is, like, the name of the company.
Yeah.
I'm like, really, you could have just made a new company, and people, like, there's such an association with the Manchurian Candidate. It didn't actually have to be Manchurian, like, you know?
But also, now this is just becoming like a discussion of Meryl Streep. If you look at something like, I think part of my case comes from, has anyone here seen Angels in America?
No.
HBO.
Oh, you should watch it because it's great. The HBO miniseries from 2003. Everybody in that is great. And then Streep shows up and it's kind of, you compare it against like Patrick Wilson, Mary Louise Parker, or even Al Pacino, that's like his best recent performance. And then Streep shows up as Ethel Rosenberg, as like a ghost. And it's sort of like, okay, hi, good to see you. So,
all right.
I wonder if we'll get any angry emails saying, how dare you speak of Meryl like that?
Maybe. It's also weird because you just called her Meryl, and I don't usually register that her first name is Meryl.
I mean, I'm sure fans of hers are like, you know, call her that or something.
I knew a girl named Meryl once. She was the opposite of Meryl Streep, which is to say I enjoyed her company. Anyway, let's move on into our feature review. The newest film by Roland Emmerich, the man who gave us such films as Independence Day and Godzilla, starring Jamie Foxx, Channing Tatum, Maggie Gyllenhaal. It is White House Down.
Hey, can I show you something?
These are White House passes.
Your dad here has a job interview with the Secret Service.
No way. This is really cool.
John Cale. Why do you want to be in the Secret Service?
I can't think of a more important job than protecting the president.
In college, you barely maintained a C average. You're not to look at Agent Todd.
Special Agent Todd keeps making those sounds. I'm going to start looking at him.
Did you get the job?
Yeah, I think I got a shot. You know how it is. They gotta go talk amongst themselves.
If you are just tuning in, we are going to breaking news out of Washington.
This is John Cale. I'm in the White House.
They've taken the building and they're holding hostages,
including my daughter.
So if you couldn't guess from the title... This is a movie about a terrorist attack that takes down the White House, and Channing Tatum plays a Capitol Police officer who is off duty on a tour with his daughter after just having failed to become a Secret Service agent, who now must ironically try to save the President of the United States from a terrorist threat that originates from within our own borders. This movie comes on the heels of Olympus Has Fallen, which Danny and I have seen, so we're going to start off. I want to get our... general thoughts on this film, and then Danny and I are going to answer the all-important question: which White House getting attacked by terrorists movie did the White House getting attacked by terrorists better? So Nick, why don't we start with you? What did you think of White House Down? Okay. Danny,
would you like me to actually...
Yeah, you can expound upon that a bit.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I would say that in its favor, you know, when we talked about the last review I did on here was Man of Steel, which I said punched me into this sort of this indifference, and then it pushed me into the territory of anger because it was just so loud and messy and chaotic. This movie has a lot of action, which, first of all, I appreciate, just because if I'm going to pay to see this movie, I mean, it's exactly what I want, and it gave me that. It is actually pretty action filled, which was a relief. I thought it was going to be a bit of a slog there, and it's mostly well composed action. There's some problems I have with the editing, but I do think that the way it's shot, I mean, Roland Emmerich, not a great director per se, but He's a pretty visually economical guy who kind of gets a lot across in just a few shots. And I think that shows here, there's kind of this... There are so many plot strands in this film. There are more narrative threads in White House Down than there is in an entire season of The Wire, which I didn't understand. I really wasn't expecting that. I thought it was just going to be Jimmy Fox and Channing Tatum hiding out in the White House, occasionally shooting people with, you know, 5 minutes worth of digressions into the side characters. Instead, they're really supporting players in this, do I dare say, Altman-esque ensemble? No, I'm not going to say that because I'm not being serious.
No, please say really. Altman-esque. I want to see what we get from that.
But no, it's the movie is very kind of big and expansive, and I appreciate the feeling of having scale when it really does take place in primarily in one building, or ostensibly it does. I think that... as far as summer entertainment goes, it does its job fairly well. I was rarely bored. The film is far too long, though. It's about 130 minutes. And again, it speaks to what I was saying about how there's so many directions it goes in with its screenplay, where really it could have been a good 95, probably, and we would have had the same. If not the same basic experience, actually a better one, because it'd be more focused and more tight. There's stuff involving, power plays.
Yeah, there's a lot of power plays.
There's there's conspiracy theories involving James Woods, James Woods is kind of, he's one of those guys who shows up every once in a while. You kind of forget that you really like him.
Yeah.
That he's a very likable actor, but... it is sort of like I feel like Roland Emmerich has this thing where he casts really good actors in kind of thankless roles, but the actors seem kind of aware of it in a way, so it isn't completely painful to watch, just because they seem to understand that it's not a production of Othello they're doing.
if only this had the weight and levity of Othello, that would be great.
Yes. And so I think that... As far as movies I've seen this summer, it is actually probably one of the better ones.
Whoa.
Better.
Pump the brakes there, buddy.
One of the better ones released by a major studio, I should note.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how many people would actually dispute that it's actually one of the better major studio releases of the summer, considering that the summer's been... I haven't seen World War Z. I haven't seen Iron Man 3.
God,
so maybe
that's not a good film.
Okay. Well, I mean, I do want to see World War Z.
Okay.
But,
well, that was more. I was more positive on that than this film. My opinion.
And so, what we have here is fine. I think it'll probably work better on FX in 2016 when you can just kind of see bits of it and forget that narratively it goes in too many directions. So overall, yeah, whatever, fine.
Okay, Danny, what about yourself?
Yeah, I would say my overall opinion is similar. Like, it's pretty acceptable piece of work. In terms of, like, having things to say about it, I find myself not really finding anything in the movie to be really good. So I don't know if anything I'm going to say is going to be, like, really positive, because I just wasn't, like, overly excited by anything. But keep in mind that I think the movie is, like, pretty good. In terms of some of the nitpicks I have, one that Nick touched on was kind of how sprawling the ensemble is and how many different plot lines there are. And for me, that was actually a bit of a letdown, because I was really looking forward to seeing Channing Tatum just, like, kill a bunch of people and be awesome.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of, like, downtime in the movie, I felt. And it's kind of a shame, too, because the first maybe 20 or 30 minutes of the movie actually do a pretty good job setting up his character. And he's a good actor. And there's a scene where he's interviewing for a job, and he kind of sells you on what his character arc is going to be. Like, he wants a Secret Service job, but he doesn't have the credentials, so he's going to save the president and get the job. And so you kind of look forward to him like doing all this crazy stuff to get the job. But I like, when I think back on the movie, like, my main image of him is just him like running through different rooms and like talking on a walkie-talkie occasionally and asking where his daughter is. And especially because he's so like agile, I just wanted him to like be going nuts all the time and just like shooting people and being crazy. So that's
testify,
one.
Testify, Danny.
So that's a general nitpick. Some of the other ones might be a bit more spoilery, so I could probably save some of those, but if you want to take it from there.
Yeah, Nick, I'm surprised that you said there was a lot of action, because when I think back on this film, my main image is Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx hiding in shafts. Hiding in claustrophobic spaces, like tunnels and shafts. Like, that's a good 40% of this movie's narrative is tunnels and shafts. Another 30% would probably be people in rooms talking about how they don't know what's going on. 15% would be hostages huddled, and then like 5% would be action, quote unquote, which is usually just like a 14-second gunfight in which miraculously only the bad guys are killed.
Really? I don't think that's accurate.
I mean, like, there's like three or four maybe fist fights that go on a little too long. And then, like, it feels like the movie is a constant, like, game of cat and mouse, wherein the mouse has a submachine gun, and whenever the cat gets too close to it, it just sprays and then runs.
Mm-hmm.
And, like Danny was saying, like, you know, you see a movie like this, like White House Down, like, and I want, like, the lone hero to stalk through the house, like, taking out people proactively. Like, I want him to be like, I'm taking this goddamn country back, you know, I gotta clear the way for the president. But it really is just like, it's just a foot chase with occasional noise. And I was actually pretty positive on this while I was watching it. I didn't take any notes during it, because why would you have to take notes during White House Down? I remember being kind of thrilled at some points. I remember laughing every now and then. But as time has gone on, and it's been literally like 13 hours since I saw this film, all the negative have slowly grown and just like bubbled and crowded out whatever good moments there were. And so I guess in the end, I kind of have to land on the negative side, which is weird because like I remember that, you know, Channing Tatum is fun in the movie. There's a great scene really early on where he kind of gives that sense of, you know, inventiveness and proactiveness that I wanted. You know, he's on the floor, he's pretending that he's just like a really frightened guy, and then he shoots a dude, and it was awesome. And I was like, yeah, that's the guy I want. I can't wait for this guy to wreak some havoc. But then the second he hooks up with the president, who's basically just like an Obama grassroots campaign supporter's like power fantasy of Obama, he's just a guy who's like running around. And it's I don't know, some of the humor lands flat. You know, I don't know how to feel about an African-American president making a joke about his Jordans.
I don't know why he's wearing sneakers.
What was that?
For that matter. I don't know why he's wearing sneakers.
Well, he's sneaking, Nick.
I guess.
Like, you know, he has to sneak. Why would he not wear sneakers? I don't know. Would it be harder or easier to fight an escape from terrorists in wingtips?
Yeah, probably easier.
Okay. Easier to escape in wingtips? My thing is, if you're going to put on shoes like that, they should be like New Balance. They should be something actually designed for running. Because I don't know much about Jordans, but I feel like they're more ornamental than actual utility.
Mm.
Please someone tell me I'm wrong. I don't know. And yeah, I cop to that.
You are completely wrong. I won't get into the specifics, but...
But yeah. I am a shoe expert. I'm going to shoe engineering at NYU. I don't know. And then again, it's just one of those things, like plot convenient bullets, like the terrorists are crack shots up until the point that they realize they're shooting at the protagonists.
Yeah.
And bullets only ever seem to find electronics that it would be better if they functioned, but now they don't. Mm-hmm. Phones work forever. I mean, I can't even post a video to YouTube in my own house with the Wi-Fi on, and someone in this movie is able to do it from the middle of the White House while it's under terrorist attack. You know, I don't know. It's like things like that I can get behind. Like, if a movie is quick enough and fun enough, I'm fine with it. But there's so much downtime in this movie that's just people having fucking teleconferences that it started to really grate on me at some point, and I couldn't get into the fun of it.
Should we point out that you kind of bring up the YouTube thing? The whole kid narrative in this is oh boy,
that's I didn't have a problem with it until the last scene. I especially think that
Joey King is pretty terrible. She's very grating. I don't know if that's how it's written or if it's her performance, but either way, I was rooting for Jason Clarke when he has the gun to her head, if we're being honest.
Well, to be honest, I'm rooting for Jason Clarke no matter what he's doing. So when I saw that he was one of the terrorists, I was like, uh-oh, my allegiances have been challenged.
Yeah.
Also, I love the fact Jason Clarke is in this. He was in Zero Dark Thirty, where he played one of the CIA advanced interrogation people. And they were in Pakistan in that movie, were they not? Because at some point in this movie, they say he did wet work in Pakistan. And I was oh shit, unofficial sequel to Zero Dark Thirty?
This is it turned out not to be that, though, right?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Which is even considered.
It's weird that, you know, I kind of found Joey King a little grating in this film, too, especially towards the end, which we'll get into in spoilers. But, like, she was the best part of Oz the Great and Powerful.
I mean, when she did a voice.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, voice acting is sometimes even more difficult than actual acting. I will point out, though, that her IMDb photo is scaring the shit out of me. I don't know if anyone else is looking at it, but take a look at it and just, like, then click away quickly. Because she's trying to consume your soul. But,
yeah, it's a little
disconcerting. But yeah, I don't know, man.
My problem with her character is just like James Vanderbilt is being given an assignment to write this Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx action movie. Why is he spending so much effort like writing some random little girl character who likes the White House?
And like, why does she become like the linchpin of the entire
operation? She's like, she's almost like the hero.
In a lot of ways. At the end of the movie, like, I guess we'll get into it in spoilers. Other problems, I hate Olympus Has Fallen did not really get into politics at all. This movie hinges heavily on politics. The entire plot is motivated by politics, and the politics of the movie are fucking stupid. Like, to an intense degree. Like, the plan that has enraged these people who are attacking the White House, who we'll get into, is just like peace in the Middle East. How are we going to do that? Let's just pull all the troops out.
Right, which I remember, because it's sort of introduced through the... It's expository, but it's not really expository, newscast thing. And just kind of what it's mentioned, I think, is this guy a good president?
No, I don't think he is.
Because it's like, what? No, presidents don't retract. I mean, granted, we don't really know the political situation in the movie because, like, why spend time on it, I guess. But at the same time, you know, you don't extract every troop from the Middle East at once. It was sort of a... I don't know.
My other thing is, like, it doesn't just seem like it's active theaters of war. It legitimately seems as though he's taking away every base that we have.
Oh, yeah, because he says, you know, those bases are just for show.
Yeah.
And it's like,
It's like, no, they're not. Like, those are strategic deployment. Like, if something goes down and we need... What? Like, we still have a military presence in Germany. Like, those are just bases that we have as, like, a worldwide support structure. Like... And it doesn't make any sense, because you pull those people out, it's like, the girl asks a very salient question when she first meets the president before shit goes down. She's like, you got all these countries with all these tribes, like, what is the treaty? Like, if you all promise to behave, we'll go home.
Yeah.
It's like your parents, like, you know, you and your friends are, like, fighting with each other, and they're like, okay, well, we're gonna sit here and watch you unless you promise that you're not gonna hit one another, and then we'll go upstairs and, like, drink some wine and not pay attention to you again. Like, what?
Yeah, it was kind of,
And then James Woods, I mean, I love the guy. He's a fine actor, but, like, he had the Ed Harris in the Rock role in this,
mm-hmm.
and he does not have the gravitas to pull off that. Like, Ed Harris makes you believe that, you know, threatening your country with missiles is actually, like, a noble thing to do. And James Woods just comes off as, like, an asshole. And the reveal of, like, why he suddenly decided to do this, I thought was going to be, like, a plot twist that I saw on SVU one time. We're kind of hedging into spoilers. Should we just make our way in there?
I guess. I mean, there's also the question of how much... I don't know. You say I don't really care about spoilers. That's not necessarily true. I don't care about spoilers for movies that I feel like don't really... aren't that deeply affected by spoilers, and I would say that this is one of them.
Well, you know, one of the reasons you go to a movie like this is to see the machinations of the plot and, like, ooh, who's the real enemy? Who lives? Who dies? Like, how does it end? Like, how did they avoid or not avoid calamitous intent? So let's just give our final opinions. Danny, Olympus Has Fallen or White House Down?
I would say they are pretty close. If I had to, you know, if I was flipping through the TV and I was hoping which one I would come across, I almost think that the R rating gives Olympus Has Fallen a slight edge, because you have a scene in that movie, like the one where Gerard Butler is interrogating two guys, and in just this amazing split-second moment, while the villains are, like, laughing at each other, he whips out a knife and just stabs one of them in the neck. And the other one just goes silent immediately. And Gerard Butler's like, yeah, like, I can do that. This movie's rated R. You don't understand. And so there are, like, moments like that peppered throughout where Gerard Butler gets to, like, go nuts. And,
you know, you say that, and yet I am sort of appalled that this movie gets away with a PG-13 rating, considering mm-hmm. not only how many people die, but how many people get shot on camera. And there's a lot of swearing. There's a lot of blood. There's a close up shot of a piece of glass stuck in Jamie Foxx's stomach. Yeah. So what is going on where this movie gets away with a PG-13 rating?
You know, there's no sex.
Yeah, there's no sex, but even
there's
then...
There's a kid.
There's a
kid in Olympus Has Fallen, too, and I like that kid a lot more.
There's swearing, and Jamie Foxx actually says, fuck you, to James Woods.
Yeah, that comes with the full weight and power of his office.
Yeah,
which is hilarious, because at that point, he's technically not the president anymore.
Yes. And they say shit a lot, too.
Yeah.
There's swearing, there's violence, there's blood. I mean, it's ridiculous that the MPAA, which is a completely broken system, so I'm not that surprised, but
it's
just absurd that they would give this a PG-13 rating. I mean, I honestly thought walking out that it was rated R, and I was surprised that it would be rated R, because I thought, oh, yeah, it's a big summer movie released by a major studio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought somehow they just kind of, they went for it. And then I learned, no, it's PG-13.
I thought that this was... Until you just said that, I was like, wait, which one of these... What? Like, I thought that White House Down was rated R.
Also, one last thing before we go into spoilers. Was anybody else... Did anybody else find it funny that the main character is named John Cale?
Like the plant?
No. Like the member of the Velvet Underground.
Oh, no. I didn't.
The violinist.
I was just blown away that his last name was Cale, and I kept expecting, like, some joke to come of that.
Okay, well, John Cale is a very accomplished musician who, it's weird because he's not really an obscure guy, per se. He's still active, actually. I don't really know what's... It was just kind of strange. It really threw me off and said, yes, John Cale, and I went, wait, what?
He's doing what now?
It'd be funny, actually, if he was played by the actual John Cale, this old Irish man.
But, like, Taken.
Yes, except he's much older and is, like, you know, has a weak... Doesn't have, like, a very impressive physique.
But see, that would be the perfect way to, like, fool all these terrorists. It's like, oh, I'm just an old man. Pop, pop. I also saw Olympus Has Fallen, and I gotta say that movie gives me everything that I want in a film, like White House Down. Without actually being White House Down. So I would go with Olympus Has Fallen. If only because I just, okay, the CG in this movie, White House Down, was awful. Like that opening scene where they're flying in. Holy God. Like I just played a game called The Last of Us on PS3.
Sure.
And its cinematics were better than that scene.
Yeah.
Like, but he loves that memorial. Yeah, that's God. His thing.
Okay, so spoilers for this film. You know, see it or don't, make up your mind as to whom to believe among us. Oh God.
All right, I can.
Yeah,
go.
I had some things to say, but now they're all crowding my mind. So, Danny, why don't you pick us up?
Well, you mentioned Jason Clark earlier.
Yep.
And I was going into this movie for whatever reason under the impression that he was going to be the main villain, and I was very excited for various reasons, like Zero Dark Thirty, and. There turns out to be like five villains or something. Yeah, and that was like kind of annoying for me, especially like because Jason Clark is actually good in this role, even though he doesn't have much to do. Like he's like one of the few bad guys here where you're like, all right, this guy's like on a mission. He's very competent and he's going to just kill people. And, but then you have like this hacker guy.
Oh, God, who's played by one of the McPoyle twins from the
Jimmy Simpson. Yeah.
Just he, like a weird...
I don't know why he shows up here. I mean, maybe there's the James Vanderbilt connection because of Zodiac. That's kind of what I initially thought. But I doubt they're like in contact or something. It was just a... Yeah, he has no purpose for this movie. He's basically the black guy from the original Die Hard. I mean, it's the same character because he shows up.
The bad guy, black guy, not the good guy, black guy.
Not Argon, no.
Argyle.
Argyle? No, sorry.
Argon?
I don't know.
The gas?
I don't know. I haven't seen Die Hard in a number of years. So, okay. But no, he shows up because he's hacking and he's like, I mean, it's so blatantly lifting from it because he's, you know, dancing to the classical music and and he has the same glasses too, actually.
Yeah, he has the same reason to exist.
Yeah, it's a terrible character, and I like Jimmy Simpson a lot, so it was disappointing to see him wasted like that.
Yeah, and then the way that he goes out in this movie is like,
what's the thing? He said he has no importance in the entire narrative. He's disposed of so easily.
He's not even important enough to get shot by someone. He just fucks up coding his own card to get out, and then it blows up on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was it. I was like, what? And a friend of mine, who I went and saw the movie with, was like, yeah, man, like, it's like a part of his character. Like, every hacker has that one thing that they always forget to do. Like, sort of like, I guess, Michael Bolton in Office Space. Like, I always fuck up on some mundane detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his mundane detail was being able to code an access card. I don't know. My main problem with this film, this goes into the plot mechanics, is just, like, you could have stopped 5 minutes before the stop of this film and it would have been fine, but they just had to throw in one more twist. And...
With Jenkins?
Richard Jenkins' character. Yeah. Where he's this, like, old man who seems really nice and, like, all this other stuff, and then he's just like, you know, you're weakening this country, goddammit. And it's just like, where is this coming from, Richard Jenkins? But, like, most movies like this say something like Air Force One or, you know, it probably... Just, like, there's always a transfer of power scene where it's like, Mr. Vice President, we have to swear you in now. And this movie has two of those.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no weight to when this, you know, talk about deaths that have no meaning. When the vice president is killed in like this really horrific way, where Air Force One is shot down with like a surface-to-air missile, and it's just sort of whatever.
Everyone is so concerned about Jamie Foxx, and yet the vice president gets killed, and everyone's like, "Nah, life goes on." But if we lose Jamie Foxx, holy shit!
And also the girl too, who was helping out. Helping out Channing Tatum in the beginning, she seemed very nice. She dies, but there's no...
Yeah, I was really sad. No, I kept expecting, like, parachutes or something, but it's like, oh no, like, that poor girl. Like, she seemed so sweet. Like, I was really sad that she was gone.
I was actually, this is going to sound really like sadistic, but I actually liked when she died.
What?
I can explain why.
Wow.
Because you're a misogynist.
No. I can explain why very coherently. So there's that scene with them at the beginning where it's like, it seems like they're dating.
Right.
Is that, yeah, okay. So.
Well, they're not dating. She wants a date.
She wants a date.
And he's using his charms to get what he wants.
Okay. So it sets them up as like a couple. And then I forgot about her. Completely forgot about her. And then it cuts back to her on the plane. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is like Channing Tatum's girlfriend. So right at that moment, by virtue of the fact that I had forgotten about her, I was dreading this moment at the climax where, like, the thing is about to end, but then he has to also save his girlfriend. And so I was just dreading, like, those 10 extra minutes where he would have to, like, save this plane somehow. But I was actually somewhat satisfied when it went down just because I was like, all right, we're not going to have that scene at the end.
That's like the view I'm taking of Game of Thrones characters. Like, I don't care when they die. You just really need to thin out that goddamn cast.
Yeah, so that was my thoughts there.
I don't know. I just, like, it was bizarre. And, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of things in this movie that are like that. At the end, actually, speaking of forgetting things, so the end of this movie is the longest 8 minutes of any film that I've seen in a while. Like, when she said he only had 8 minutes to get his daughter and, like, the president out of there, that's what I thought I was going to get in the rampage. I wanted, like, Cillian Murphy in 28 Days Later style rampage. You could have had In a House in a Heartbeat playing as he did it, and it would have made it all the better. But instead, he, like, gets in one fist fight and then just, like, spends 30 seconds looking at the back of his daughter's head saying, come on, baby, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drives a car through a thing, and then some other stuff happens. But the way that the movie ends is a bunch of airplanes are going to shoot the White House full of missiles. And, which I don't know why. Like, what were they attempting to accomplish by doing that? Because really, it's like there's three terrorists left and a bunch of hostages. And we already know the PIOC can withstand a nuclear blast. So, like, wouldn't your assumption be that the terrorists would be in the most secure area? Who knows? Anyway.
Maybe because it's coming from Richard Jenkins, who turns out to be a traitor.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, why would people think that, you know, like, the president in this movie apparently has the sheer will and audacity to do whatever he wants, and no one ever says anything. Like, his advisory committees are bullshit. Anyway, the little girl picks up the flag of the presidency.
There's a really funny line where Maggie Gyllenhaal says, your first order as president is going to be to destroy the White House.
But see,
which I thought was funny, and I think that's an intentionally funny line.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I mean, maybe... Because really, who cares about plot developments in this movie? So if it gets a funny line...
That landed and it was good. But then the crazy thing is, I also liked Richard Jenkins' follow-up, which was, this country is stronger than just one house. I was like, you know, that's a good point. Like, a lot of people are like, oh my god, the White House. It's like, no, that's not where the power resides. The power resides in us. But then he turns out to be a villain. So, like, the one vaguely, like, prosaic, meaningful line in the entire film was spoken by a traitor. But the little girl, like, does a flag wave, and here we get another Rock parallel, because it's like, the planes are coming in, they're gonna bomb everything, and then there's Nick Cage with the smoke, and then the little girl with the flag, and the planes are like, pull up, I can't do this. It's just, I don't know. Fucking goddammit.
Mm.
And then the most egregious part for me was more bad CGI at the end when they do another flyby of the Lincoln Memorial.
Got to that circular structure.
God. And then, Jesus. Wait, circular structure.
Is that the wrong word?
Jefferson Memorial is circular. Lincoln Memorial is rectangular.
What?
I just meant...
Oh, you meant,
like,
story
writing.
Structure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you meant the Jefferson Memorial.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the actual
memorial. No, I just meant...
Like, being
like,
a circular structure.
Sorry. Just meant that Vanderbilt had to do it.
I gotcha. Yeah, like, that was more egregious CGI, but also, like... Going back to the weird politics of this movie, like, as soon as they're on the plane, someone's like, hey, guess what? France and a bunch of other places called in. They all agree. We should all have peace. It's like, what does that mean? Do you know how many peace treaties we've signed in the history of the world? Like, and also, why after we almost, because of our lack security, caused a nuclear World War III, like, would people be like, yeah, we should probably have peace, instead of like, hey, America, maybe you should lock your shit down tight, and maybe we can use this as a political advantage to get you to reduce your arms.
And well, also because I was thinking how, I think the ending of this movie is actually pretty interesting, even if it doesn't intend to be interesting, when, you know, after this movie ends, the conflict's not over, because you have to go to a deeply, deeply broken American system where the Speaker of the House is a traitor who's willing to blow up the White House to get his way. I mean, I think that the movie is hilariously anti-right wing.
Oh, because, no, it's insanely hilariously anti-right wing.
Which I guess maybe James
like
Vanderbilt
newsroom
is,
levels of
anti-right-wing. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the, of course, the the terrorists all run, you know, Breitbart-esque blogs against the president, and it's sort of like, okay.
And, like, and one of the comedic elements of the film is the, I guess, Glenn Beck-esque character.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who, like, spends the entire time crying, and the terrorist loves him. And then he gets shot in the leg for a little girl, which I guess is supposed to be his redemption. Though the real hero in this movie is Donnie the tour guide.
Yeah.
He was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was,
I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
I wish that
it was
the movie,
okay, if a little, I don't know. I didn't really need the comic relief. I feel like there was enough.
You know what a better movie would have been, now that I think about it? You know, you're saying, like, there was too much comic relief. I think they should have just gone full tilt into it. And, like, Channing Tatum had to find the president. And who better to lead him through the hallowed halls of the White House than Donnie the tour guide? Like, buddy cop style.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. White House Down 2. Donnie, the Rise of Donnie. Dawn of Donnie.
Did anyone, just while we're on the sort of the funny intentionally or not side, did anyone else just have a very difficult time buying Jamie Foxx as the president?
Oh, yeah. I could not believe it.
He's playing like, yeah, he's basically playing like this weird, like, movie version of Obama, which was kind of funny, like, sort of the way he spoke. And, I mean, it was sort of funny, but it was also just very difficult to take seriously because I think I've jokingly referred to him as, before the movie came out, I've jokingly referred to him as President Jamie Foxx. Because that's what he is. Like, and it's just, maybe it would have been better if he was playing Django as the president.
That would have been awesome. But yeah, like I said, this movie is just a giant, like, anyone who's ever grown sick and tired of people calling Obama like a lightweight and an intellectual as an insult,
well,
I guess.
Now you have
White House Down. This is like if you're offended whenever people think that Obama's ineffectual or like effete, like you have, this is what you'd close your eyes and think of. It's like, no,
get your hands off my Jordans.
Yeah. God.
Which maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's a little culturally insensitive.
That's what I was saying earlier. I just don't know how to feel about that. I don't know. And again, you bring up the excellent point. Is he a good leader? I don't think he is. And he says at some point, like, you know, I just want to make a difference. Like, that's what I want to do. And it's like, and your way of doing that is just to rip the entire military structure out of the Middle East. And then the weird thing is they try to, like, they give him an Obama-esque speech at some point that's like, you know, my friend Ricky, which is just the most, like, I'm not going to try to think of a name of a kid from the hood, so I'm just going to go like, hey, Ricky. Yeah. Ricky lives in the hood. He's like, my friend Ricky was going to rob a corner store because he was hungry. And then my mom brought him in, and she made him a meal and said he could stay with us whenever he wanted. And, like, you know, he's like, you take away the propensity for violence. So what? Your mom's going to go cook fucking food for everyone in the Middle East? Like, you're...
I don't know. I mean, I guess...
If this had been a war on drugs movie and it was a drug cartel that did this, that would be fine. Like, it would make sense. And that speech would make sense in the context of it. But as it is, it's literally just like, what if every right-wing wacko in the United States just took over the White House? How would they do it? You know, the Speaker of the House is in on it. And the head of the Security Council, surreptitiously. Because he has a golf ball-sized tumor on his brain. And I thought they were going to be like, oh, he's like, you know, there was an SVU where a woman raped a child. And it turned out that she did it because she had a tumor. And I was like, oh, my God, is that what's happening right now? Like, it's pushing on his frontal lobe. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's not the same man he was. Look, his signature changed over the course of 6 months. Like, really, guys? And then he has his psycho wife who's like, you're doing this for Kevin. You know, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, he's not like getting personal revenge or anything. He's just like, yeah, I'm just going to wipe them all out. Let's wipe out all them bitches.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to try to expose something like Ed Harris was doing.
Yeah, not really.
No, he wasn't. He was just being a dick.
So even though we've noted a lot of ineffectual aspects of the movie, I guess maybe I can appreciate being able to dig into them a bit, which, you know, doesn't mean that the movie gets away with these problems, but I don't know. I guess that is part of why I like it, because it was always it's sort of like The Newsroom in a weird way, where I'm watching it and I can recognize all the problems and I'm actually enjoying it because I can sort of pick these things out piece by piece. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a stimulating exercise to watch it because I understand that I can sort of identify what is not working, and maybe White House Down will be the movie that sort of propels the next generation of critics forward, because it helps them, you know.
Okay.
No, maybe not.
Maybe not. No, I think of this as The Newsroom because, again, it's just like an insanely liberal fantasy of like, man, if only there was someone like this. Like, if only there was a news reporter like Will McAvoy to really tear down the Tea Party. If only Obama could save the world from, or not even save the world, but just survive a attack on the White House, people wouldn't think he was such a pussy, and then he could get some stuff done. It's like, I'm a fairly apolitical guy. Like, none of this shit really affects me. So I just don't care. But it's just like, it's so egregious and it's so poorly executed that I'm like, couldn't you put a little more fucking effort into it?
Mm.
Couldn't you have a little more like faith and consideration for the audience? But I guess not. Oh well. It also is always nice to see DC in a movie. Oh wait, okay. Final thing, Nick. You brought up 9/11 imagery in Superman, Man of Steel.
Yeah.
What'd you think about that Capitol Dome collapsing in on itself?
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of there, but not as strongly as in Superman or Star Trek, which was about buildings collapsing.
Yeah.
Well,
this was a building collapsing, and this was an implosion too, which is Jesus.
I mean, it was
a really loud thunder. Can people hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Mother Nature
okay?
having her say, just had a really loud thunder strike. No, I don't know. I just like it's an implosion, and I guess that for me is more 9/11 imagery than a building tipping over.
I guess so, yeah.
Because for me, this is getting ridiculous. But, I mean, like, that was the most iconic, you know, terrifying part of that, was the alien nature of the implosion, as opposed to your usual summer blockbuster where Godzilla whips his tail and the building falls over.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think we've covered every possible aspect of this film. So let's move on, right?
Any final thoughts?
Danny?
I have a lot of final thoughts, but unfortunately, since we're wrapping up, I'll have to save them for myself.
Okay.
But I do have a lot of other really rich things to say.
You can go to Danny's blog, White House Down the Rabbit Hole, to hear more about his theories regarding this film. Mm. Okay, so coming out to Blu-ray and DVD. Not a lot. A lot of reissues, things like The Producers, The Kentucky Fried Movie, Jaws... new coming out, Tower Block, Venus and Serena, Inescapable. And there's a reissue of Jaws, which is what I'm going to go for, just because everything else does not sound that great.
The Trouble with Harry by Alfred Hitchcock is coming out, so I'm sure that's worth checking out. Yeah, I mean, Jaws is great, but it's been on Blu-ray since August, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a reissue, like a new cover or something, which is always stupid. But I mean, you know, The producer is great. I don't really know how much that will benefit from a from a Blu-ray transfer per se.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a Blu-ray transfer of like being there. It's like that's not where it is.
I mean, six of these movies actually can look very nice on Blu-ray, but my memory of the producers is not a visually grand piece of work.
Yeah, but the sound quality is so much better, so they're
that's
punchy
true.
Dialogue.
Springtime for Hitler.
Yep.
It's around.
Danny, any things to add?
For
Blu-ray's duties.
For our tennis enthusiast listeners, I think Venus and Serena is a safe bet. It's about people that play tennis. So
people, not just Venus and Serena Williams.
I don't think this is like a...
This isn't a general tennis documentary.
Yeah, no, I was speaking very intentionally, kind of uninformed, because I haven't seen it. So,
I've heard.
All right, that didn't land at all.
Now, moving on to rescue Danny from himself. Next week, The Lone Ranger, Despicable Me 2, The Way, Way Back, Kevin Hart, Let Me Explain, and that's it. I am not particularly looking forward to any of these, though Kevin Hart's hilarious, and I've heard things about The Way, Way Back. But as far as the two big ones, The Lone Ranger and Despicable Me 2, yeah, not excited at all about The Lone Ranger. And Despicable Me 2, they seem to be leaning way too heavy on the minions, which was my least favorite part of the first film. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll never see that movie.
Well, if you guys were a little put off by the runtime of White House Down, prepare to buckle up for Lone Ranger.
Oh.
It's
149 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I guess is not a surprise, because Gore Verbinski
likes those.
I mean, yeah, because he did the Pirates movies, which are all way too long. And I mean, The Lone Ranger, I'm not sure if I'll ever see that either. I don't know. Should we? We don't have to review it, do we, guys?
Nick, I hate to tell you this, but probably.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, is anyone particular? Like, again, just to sum up, is anyone particularly excited about any of this?
Nope.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
It's pretty slim.
Slim pickings. Next week, though, we'll have Pacific Rim to look forward to. Unless we want to look at Grown Ups 2.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Okay. Awesome. Good to hear there's so much enthusiasm. All right, so let's talk about what we watched on our own, and then we can get out of these fine people's hair. Danny, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, happy to. Watched several works of cinema this week. One of the better ones was one of my last remaining Soderbergh blind spots. Most of them come from the 90s, and I'm assuming this is the last film he made in the 90s, because it came out in 1999, called The Limey. Great film. I was completely in the dark in this movie, just in terms of like its concept and its construction. I had no idea that it was edited so sort of radically and in a really good way. It's almost like that really good love scene in Out of Sight, where it sort of intertwines their conversation with their escapades in the hotel room, where it sort of blends those two things. The Limey is kind of like that technique stretched to feature length, in terms of it just has all these flashbacks and flash forwards and jumps in time. And it's a really cleverly constructed film. And Terrence Stamp is also excellent. Really, really good movie.
That is the film that... Isn't that the one where he like chopped it up and like remixed everything and the writer
like,
was not too pleased?
Yeah, I actually I didn't listen to their commentary together. The writer is Lem Dobbs, but I read a summary of the commentary, and it's funny how much Lem Dobbs like rips on Soderbergh. And another thing that's funny, too, is there's a really celebrated shot in the film where Terrence Stamp gets beat up and he's on the ground and the bad guys walk away. And in the same take, he gets up and he pulls out a gun out of his like waist, and the camera still holds and he shoots them off screen. And it's this really good take that Soderbergh obviously got credit for, but Lem Dobbs makes a point of saying, like, I wrote in the script, do this in one take, and Soderbergh just did what I told him to do. So he's like, he's pissed for that. And then, I mean, just in terms of certain reviewers saying that the movie is like a standard revenge story plot line, Dobbs kind of complains that stuff was cut out of the script. So it is funny to track their dynamic.
Well, Nick, what about yourself?
I figure, because I haven't actually been on the show in 2 weeks, but I'll go with things I watched in the past week just to play fair.
Good.
You know, why not?
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Okay. The movie I'll select for the purposes of this discussion is a movie called Tristana, directed by Louis Buñuel, starring the great Catherine Deneuve. Anybody here seen it? Any of you?
I have not.
Is that new on Blu-ray?
Yeah, it actually is. And I think the DVD I watched was from 2007 or so. But what happened was the day before I watched Viridiana, if that's how you pronounce it, maybe I'm getting that wrong, which is a 1961 movie that he made, which is kind of like Viridiana and Tristana are kind of in dialogue with each other, even if they're not direct, you know, companions. But Tristana stars Catherine Deneuve as this woman who's kind of trying to get out of this domestic relationship with a kind of domineering man. And, you know, in typical Buñuel fashion, the narrative that spins out of it is kind of taking this conventional idea and going in a completely foreign direction, kind of unlike any approach to this sort of story I've ever seen. And it's a it sort of has this, you know, elliptical editing style, and which gives it kind of like a dream, sort of a dream-esque quality. And of course, you know, Catherine Deneuve is one of my favorite actresses of all time, really. So, you know, to see her here is a total pleasure, and she's really, really fantastic. And it's also a beautiful looking film too. It has sort of this kind of, I talk about the editing in the movie, which has this specific quality to it. The cinematography kind of is this glowing, sort of enveloping style that kind of emboldens the narrative, I think. So, I would say, I wonder how the Blu-ray of the movie looks, because the DVD looks pretty nice, although it's a few years behind, so there's a bit of blur there. I wonder how that Blu-ray looks, but overall, yeah, I can highly recommend Tristana.
Right, excellent. I didn't have a lot of time to watch movies this week, so the one thing I was able to watch was on last night, right before I went and saw White House Down. It's a story about a horse.
Oh, yeah,
that's in a war.
Tweet. That was a funny tweet.
But that's one charming goddamn horse.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, my. Yeah, I watched War Horse. I saw it in theaters, and I have a friend whose tweet I'd like to read, because he hated this movie, and he hates it for all the reasons that I could have hated it but decided not to. He said, I hate that movie. It's completely manipulative, and I lack the gene that makes me say ooh over a horse. I was actively cheering for the horse's death by the end. And I can see that. Because this movie, like, but I'd like War Horse. Like, for the same reasons that I like We Bought a Zoo. It's like, yes, it's emotionally manipulative. Yes, it's all these other things. But you know what? War Horse has some of the most painterly beautiful images that you're going to see on film from that year or any other year. It has the colors and vibrancy of The Life of Pi without the CGI. I presume that there's none. Like, it feels real and tactile in there. And you know what? I was only going to watch that film for like 30 minutes while I did something else. But God damn it, if I wasn't riveted and almost late to White House Down, because it was the middle of the scene towards the end, spoilers for War Horse, when they find each other again, and he's blind, and he's like, it's got four white socks and a little mark on his head like this. And the guy's like, it's not the right horse. And then they're like, no, you just gotta wash off his legs. And like, they show them washing the entire fucking horse, which is, like, completely unnecessary, but it's so heart-wrenching. I was just so happy that they found one another again. Oh, my God.
Whoa, horse.
I'm having, like, paroxysms of joy right now, just remembering War Horse. It's a good movie.
It is a good film.
It's a magical, like, everyone keeps going, it's a remarkable horse. It's just like, I guess one of the most underserved conflicts in terms of cinema is World War I, and I was a little pissed off that, like, the great World War I film of my generation is going to be about a goddamn horse, but it still works. Like, the plot threads, the vignettes that the horse is a part of are interesting and heartbreaking, and it's just, I don't know, it's goddamn Spielberg. Like, he just wins.
I remember when that movie came out, I don't think I was more sort of tired of... I don't know, I felt the criticisms around that movie to be very repetitive and kind of single-minded and not particularly interesting. They're all kind of, oh, it's so manipulative. It's so...
Cinema is manipulation.
It's so saccharine. And I go, okay, you know, I think there is... I don't think the movie is actually that quote-unquote manipulative. I think it's actually... I think it's a very, very well composed piece of work, and I think it's a very earnest movie too. And I think that the movie actually, I think that the problem is not the movie. I think it's the problem is the reviewers who, I mean, you can criticize the movie maybe for a weird structure or some kind of tenured dialogue, but I do think that the movie is very earnest, and the problem is that people, frankly, I mean, this is going to sound lame because it is, but people basically acted like they were too cool for it, I think. And I was like, dude, seriously, fuck you.
And this totally,
really?
Like, I don't felt like one of those old-time movies. Like, every cut, like, there's a scene where the little French girl's trying to teach him to jump, and there's just her grandfather, like, looking out of the window and laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it felt like an old-time movie, like, in the best way. Like, it had the cutting and the pacing and the kind of buoyancy of The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, it's so fucking good.
Right. And actually,
I don't know what else to say. It's like a straight-up Michael Curtiz film. It's just, it's fun. And the horse is really charming.
A lot of people, you know, a lot of the criticisms which surrounded it kind of, I think, sort of encapsulated. It was sort of a microcosm of general Spielberg criticisms, which are barely... criticisms. It's people bringing their own baggage to it, or they're not actually discussing the work, where they would look at it and they'd go, oh, it's like, they were, you know, they, it became kind of like an easy target for people, where they'd pick on it going, oh, well, there's a scene where the horse like jumps over the tank. It's like, well, what are you talking about? Like, that's not, just bringing that scene up as some kind of snide point is not, that's not a valuable discussion of the film. I mean, talk about how, you know, again, it's a thrilling scene.
It
which
is
immaculately constructed. You don't have to, I mean, nobody has to like War Horse, but
I'm
found
still
that
confused
the,
as to where that tank was going, but like, it doesn't matter because I was in the mindset of the horse.
Nobody has to like the film, but I did think that the, yeah, I don't know. It was one of those moments where I saw
the tenor
where,
of the criticisms was a little weird.
Yeah, I saw where a lot of the priorities lay.
Yeah, it's an inherently ridiculous premise for a film, I'm not going to lie, but like, I still liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that redeems me possibly for a little bit of my distaste towards Lincoln.
No.
Yeah. I do want to see Lincoln again, though, because I'm feeling like maybe I should give it another one. Though I think that most of my concerns regarding it will remain. Maybe I'll be able to appreciate some of the technical aspects more.
Maybe.
Anyway, that brings us to the end. Everyone check out War Horse. It's one of those films. It's on all the premium channels all the time now. But yeah, War Horse. Let's tell the people where we can be found, and then we can leave until next week. So Nick, why don't you kick us off?
Thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and on my YouTube channel.
No one calls it a blog anymore. All right. Danny, what about yourself?
Thefilmstage.com, thekingbulletin.com, twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And you can find me at dearfilm.net, my personal site, as well as filmstage.com and twitter.com/BrianJRowan. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And we will be back next week. Let's tell the people where we can be found, and then we can leave until next week. So, Nick, why don't you kick us off?
Okay.
Nick? Nick?
Reference the White House.
Nick? Nick?
Saying, hello?
Yeah, we didn't hear a single goddamn thing you said.
Hello?
Yeah, we didn't hear a single goddamn thing you said. Nick. Nick.
what happened there?
I don't know. I'm gonna, Nick, are you back?
Hello?
Nick.
Hello.
Can you hear us?